That was Ton Ton by Mali musician Salif Keita. And he's mentioned by Rob Baker in the second part of his interview with Bridget Leslie. Rob is an author and a musician, and he spent a lot of time in Mali. And music festivals in the time, in the desert, were very, very popular, as were international artists like Salif. And Rob chronicled this all in his book, Tubab Tales.
Now, you wrote about the legacy of the fish people as well. I found that really interesting. Tell us about that.
Oh, yeah, that's interesting, isn't it? So the Dogon claimed to know facts about the sky and the stars, astronomy, that the West has only discovered recently. So, for example, they say that Sirius has... Well, they discovered, apparently, that Sirius has two partner stars, and the West only found this out, you know, a matter of decades ago. But they've apparently known this for hundreds of years, and they have a big festival every 50 years, which is the time of the orbit. And they've been doing that for years. And I said, well, how do you know this? And they said, actually, oh, Sirius has a third partner star, by the way, but your Tubab telescopes haven't discovered it yet. So they still claim they've got superior knowledge of the skies, but with no... telescopes. So I said, how do you know all this? And they said, these fish-like aliens, scaly fish-like aliens called the Nomos, came down from space hundreds, if not thousands of years ago. And they taught us how to drink, you know, and they told us about the night sky. And, you know, which seems very fanciful indeed, but that is what the Dogon firmly believe. Even to this day, many of them still believe this and say, yeah, fish-like aliens came down to Dogon country, told us about the stars. So so that's why I put the chapter in called The Legacy of the Fish People, precisely to make people read on and find out what it's all about.
It was really interesting, I have to say. You also mentioned in the book about Libya, Gaddafi, and we spoke earlier about Mali's politics. Take us through some of your observations.
Yes, yes, yes. Well, we arrived in 2009 and then left, very quickly in 2012. We were essentially evacuated with a matter of days to get out. And I suppose what I noticed, alongside all the wonderful experiences, I noticed the political climate hotting up every month we were there. So when we first arrived, you know, you were allowed to travel as far as Timbuktu. You were allowed to travel, you know, to the borders in every direction. And the longer we stayed, the smaller that region got because of the risks. Because in the Sahara, there's Al-Qaeda and other different groups, you know, and they pose quite a threat. And so, for example, when we were living in Bamako, some guy threw a hand grenade. For example, when we were in Bamako, some guy threw a hand grenade over the wall of the French embassy. So things like this were happening more and more on a day-to-day basis. There were more riots in town. Gaddafi had an interesting role in Mali because the Malians mostly quite liked him, or quite a lot of them did, because they said he was investing in the country. He would build schools. He built the main government buildings. And he did quite a lot to try and help Mali. And the Malians liked him. But then when he died, people who'd been fighting his war with him in Libya brought lots of his weapons to the Sahara. And that's really what triggered off the coup, because they had all these high-tech Libyan, you know, missile launchers and goodness knows what. And the Malian army was no match for that. They didn't have anything like the arsenal. And so therefore, the coup happened because the army guys weren't able to defend themselves. So it's the politics has got, you know, quite interesting and quite unstable. And that's what's now led to this second coup, which just happened, you know, a week or so ago, because the president who was brought in was backed by France, and Mali doesn't want France to be involved in the choice of the president. They want to be independent. So it does get very tricky there, you know, which is a shame. And it does make me very sad that probably about, you know, 60-70% of the places I visited in Tubab Tales are now off limits to any Westerner, and even most Malians, because of the situation and the risk of either being taken hostage or, you know, just something else nasty happening, really. So that kind of saddens me, and I hope it clears up, you know, in the coming years.
Oh, indeed. Certainly, we do. We hope for the same thing as well. Now, I laughed when I read the next chapter on Timbuktu. There are people who actually think that this place is a myth, but you've actually visited. What was it like?
Now, Timbuktu. Yeah, see, the thing about Timbuktu. Yeah, half. I one quote in Two Bub Tales I say is that half the world thinks it's fictitious and the other half thinks it's an island. You know, they think it's some island in the Caribbean or something. But no, Timbuktu is home to one of the oldest universities in the world. Hundreds of years ago, there was a university, a big centre for learning there. It's got one of the biggest and finest mosques as well. And if I say it's overrated, that makes me sound like, you know, I'm a real kind of party pooper. But it is overrated quite hugely because it looks like all the other African towns you visit in that part of Mali. Very sandy, lots of low buildings, you know, lots of camels everywhere, wells, you know, and just very, very dusty indeed. But I think what's made it so famous is firstly how extremely remote it is, because it's right there in the middle of the Sahara. Well, not quite the middle, but in the southern bit of the Sahara, miles from anywhere. And it was also an important stop off on the trading route. So the university and the trading route, people would come from Morocco on their camels, and then they would trade spices for salt and different things, because there are huge salt mines, you know, just out in the desert from Timbuktu. So it's famous for that. So I think the center for learning, along with the salt. And then the West had this real quest to reach Timbuktu, which heightened its image, if you like, because, you know, they were saying in France and in London, they were saying, right, we'll give you this much money if you can make it to Timbuktu and come back with information about this mystical city, you know. And so it made it seem so much more cloaked in mystery than it was actually just a city, you know. But many people died in the 18th and 19th century trying to get to Timbuktu from Europe, because, you know, there were so many risks, whether they were attacked or they got yellow fever or malaria. A lot of people tried to get there and did make it. So yeah, it's just another Malian city, really. Hate to put a damper on it, but it's not really that different from other cities and towns, just a bit drier and a bit more remote, I suppose.
And you also described the world's most remote festival, the festival in the desert. What was that like?
Oh, the festival in the desert. See, Malian musicians. I mean, I don't know how many of the listeners have heard of some of these, but Salif Keita is a very famous Malian singer. Amadou and Mariam are very famous. Then there's Basiku Kouyaté. There's so many people. Oumou Sangare. They're all really famous people. There are lots of them. And also Alifa Katouré, who was super famous. And he passed away, you know. But the festival, yeah, it was until, well, it's now stopped because of the situation. But for many years, it was out in the desert, probably about 20, 30 miles out of Timbuktu, in a place called Essakane. And it was just sand dunes around, nothing else. So it really was the most remote one. It started very, very small with some Tamashek musicians. They're the Tamashek known as the Tuaregs, who wear the big turbans around their head and ride camels and what have you quite often. And a few musicians started a very small festival, and it gradually grew, and more people from around the world came to the festival. Bono from U2 was at the festival in the desert one year. So was Damon Albarn from Blur, and so was there's one or two other really famous musicians, and they've been there, you know, from all over the world. So yeah, it's a big music festival, you know, which would draw lots of tourists from the West as well as Africans, and they'd have musicians from all over the world playing, you know, throughout the festival right into the night, you know. And very, very atmospheric indeed. It's just unlike anything, you know. We have festivals in the UK, like Glastonbury or whatever, but there's a village just down the road, whereas this was absolutely in the middle of nowhere, you know. But it moved closer to Timbuktu because of the terror threat, and now it's stopped altogether. So, you know, I'd love to see it resurrect again in a few years' time.
So what's your next adventure once we can all travel again?
My next adventure, I suppose I should try and do a Two Bub Tales 2 or something, shouldn't I, and see what I can do. I mean, we're at the point now, my children are now adults, so it's quite feasible that in a year or two we may go back and work in Africa again, which I would love. I've always been to French-speaking Africa because I studied French. So I don't know, maybe Cameroon, maybe Senegal, which is also a really interesting country. But I will keep writing.
Bridget Leslie there, continuing her interview from last week with musician and author Rob Baker.